Okay, so this is actually joint work with my student Jason Fendler. So I've actually worked on sensor network problems, I guess, before sensor networks were hot. In fact, my thesis was on decentralized detection and sensor networks, but the sensors we were considering was these large radars, right, and not these modern wireless sensor networks. So I've worked a lot on detection estimation problems in sensor networks, but this is a problem with slightly different flavor. So I thought it might be more interesting to this audience. So, actually, John's talk was actually a very good introduction to this problem of saving energy in sensor networks. So I'm not going to have to spend too much time on this, motivating why we need to do this. But basically, there are various ways to save energy, but a very effective way to do it, what I'm going to focus on in this talk, is to switch the sensors between active and sleep modes. And like cats, sensors like to be in this mode more than this mode. how can you affect this transition between active and sleep? You can have an external activation device. You have send a lot of RF power to this sensor. If it has some kind of paging channel, it can be woken up when it's needed. And that's one way to do it. An alternative might be to, and maybe more practical in some situations, is that if you have a sensor that's asleep, you can't communicate with it. Okay? So you basically, the sensor that goes to sleep sets an alarm clock, and when the alarm clock goes off, it comes awake. So that's the model I'm going to consider. Okay? And of course, if you have sleeping sensors, you could have degradation of performance, communication or sensing performance. I'm going to consider sensing. And the design problem is to design sleeping policies that basically trade off energy consumption and performance, kind of what John was talking about earlier. You want to trade off, say, detection performance with energy consumption through duty cycling. So that actually leads to my next slide, which is one way to do this transition is to have the sensors basically choose either a deterministic or random duty cycle, go to sleep and come awake, and hopefully, you know, you can design your duty cycle in such a way to give you a desired trade-off between energy and performance. Okay? And the advantage of doing something like this is that it's generic. You can apply this to any network. Okay? But what I'm going to focus on is something that's slightly different, a smart or adaptive approach. And in the smart approach, you want to use all the information available in the network at a given time to set the sleep time of the sensors. Okay? Of course, if you want to do that, that's going to be necessarily application specific. Okay? So for depending on the kind of problem you want to solve, tracking, detection, estimation, so on, you may have to change the way you do the sleeping. Okay? But what's the advantage then? The advantage is that potentially you could get a lot of energy savings over duty cycle policies. And I'm going to show that, you know, in some cases you can get exponential savings in the problem. Okay, so let's see that. So the problem that I'm going to, specific problem I'm going to talk about, and this methodology applies to other problems as well, is the problem of tracking. So it's a dynamic decision-making problem, a tracking in a dense sensor network. And this is a kind of like a problem that the other John talked about yesterday. So you have a sensor network with lots of sensors. These sensors can switch between active and sleep modes to save energy. And basically, we assume, the sensors have some range within which they can detect the presence of the object. Okay? Again, the sensors need to come awake in order to detect the object. Again, here, as I said before, more generally, in this specific case, having sleeping sensors could result in tracking errors. And so you need to trade off energy consumption and tracking errors through sleeping policies. Okay, so let's look at a more. So this is okay. Even though this is supposed to be a mathematical workshop, I purposely didn't include any equations in this talk because, as mathematicians, you should be able to fill in the equations when necessary. So you have sensors distributed in a two-dimensional field, and we assume that the object follows some random path, usually a Markov model, and the statistics for now we'll assume are known. Okay. Okay, and also initially, I'm going to assume that all of this is coordinated by a central controller. And actually, in tracking applications, you would like to have some kind of central device, although it's not necessary. And John Fisher talked about the case where you kind of maintain the location of the object at some kind of leader node or whatever.
Leader node,
yes.
Most relevant node.
So here, initially, let's assume there's a central controller. A central controller can communicate with the sensors, but only with the ones that are awake. Okay? And if a sensor that comes awake, okay, we'll look at discrete time here, it remains awake for one time unit, during which three things happen. If it sees the object, okay, it reports an observation to the central controller, and then of course, at that point, it receives a new sleep time from the central controller, and that new sleep time could be, say, zero, so it stays awake another time unit, or it could be stay asleep for 10 units, for example. And so it sets its sleep time into the new sleep time and enters sleep mode. Okay, so that's the model. we have, as I said, a Markov model for the movement of the object. Okay, with the terminal or absorbing state when the object leaves the system. So it's, for example, this is the region in which you're interested in tracking. Once the object leaves the system, you don't care. The state of the system consists of two parts. The position of the object, of course, and the other important component is the residual sleep times of the sensors. Okay? So the sensors that are asleep here are the ones that are the unfilled circles. Okay? And all those guys have some amount of sleep time to go. And all those residual sleep times from the stable system. And we have control inputs to the system, okay, which are the new sleep times for the ones that have come awake, and exogenous inputs, of course, through the Markov object movement. So all of this actually fits well into the standard Markov decision process model. Okay,
do you
and
have
so
a
we need
direct
to,
link. It's a direct link from each node to the central controller.
Yes, I'm assuming direct link. Noiseless direct link. Okay, so now, but the problem is that you don't see the entire state because you don't know where the object is necessarily at all times. Okay, if you knew where the object was, you wouldn't have a tracking problem. So we have partially observable state, and so this of course fits under the POM-NP or partially observable Markov decision process framework. Okay, and we can obviously reformulate our MDP problem in terms of the distribution of the position of the object, which is a sufficient statistic, along with the residual sleep times. Okay, so this is all standard stuff for those who know POM-DP. What about our sensing model? We assume that so each sensor provides some noisy observation related to the object's location. Okay, and we'll consider a very simple sensing model in just a minute. And in general, it could be some noisy estimate, for example. Could be some kind of you could assume some kind of log normal shadowing model where the the observations related to the distance to the object through some log normal model. Okay. The other component here is the energy cost. So we'll assume that each sensor that's awake, okay, incurs a cost of C per unit time. Okay, very simple energy cost model. And our tracking cost is somehow measured through some kind of distance measure between the actual position and the estimated object position. Okay, if, for example, pretty mean squared error. Right? So let's actually put this all together. So what we actually have is a dynamical system model, of course, with control inputs, right? So what's happening here? So we have a nonlinear filter that's doing the tracking for us. Okay, basically, what the nonlinear filter gives us is an a posteriori probability of the position of the object given the observations. So that's the p of x given z. So that's what that's computed. Okay, the nonlinear filter. Okay, and that posteriori probability then goes into a location estimate that's based on the distortion metric, and that outputs your location estimate. The upper layer probability, which is also part of the sufficient statistic for sleeping, will be fed into the sleeping policy generator, which then affects the observations through the sleeping policy. Okay, so that's the loop. So let's study this in more detail for a very simple example, okay, just to get some insight. Okay, so let's assume that the sensors are inside little square boxes, okay, like Dungeons and Dragons or something like that. So a sensor, if it's awake inside this box, can see the object within the box, and the object just hops from one box to the other, right, through a Markov model, okay? And so the sensing ranges actually cover the whole field of interest if all of them are awake, with no overlap. Okay, and so it's a very simple sensing model. And if the object is in a cell where the sensor is awake, you see it; otherwise, you don't see it. So you have no tracking error if you see the object; otherwise, you have a tracking error. Okay. So before we study this problem, analyze the optimum solution of this problem, let's see what we can gain relative to the duty cycle policies that John Stankovich was talking about. So what if we apply a duty cycle policy to this problem? So if you have all the sensors awake, you would track with zero tracking error. Okay, you would have this point. If you have no sensors awake, you have one tracking error per unit time because you don't see the object at all. And basically, your duty cycle policy gives you a point on the line joining these two. So your trade-off curve is this line, okay, as you change the duty cycle. Okay, I claim you can do a lot better than this in many cases. Okay, so basically, at least this point, it doesn't have to be here. You can track the ball perfectly without having all the sensors awake. And that's not that hard to see. So let's look at this simple example. Suppose the object takes a random walk, goes to the right or left one unit at a time. Okay, so for example, you're always tracking the object in this case. So what should you do? So this guy, the object's here. It's being seen by this sensor. How long should this sensor sleep? One time unit away. Of course, this guy has to be awake the next time unit, because the object could possibly show up there. So one distance unit away, you allow to sleep for one time unit. Two distance units away, you're allowed to sleep for two time units, and so on and so forth. So it's a linear thing, but you don't have to stay awake all the time to always track the object. Okay.
So did you does this mean that you need to know who's awake adjacent?
Well, you need to know where the object is, and I'm assuming that you already know where the object is in all times, and then how should you pick the sleep time? It's kind of a circular argument, but you can actually show that there are policies that give you a point like this. In fact, with about 100 sensors for the example I just described, this always track happens with keeping five or six sensors awake per unit time, which is a lot smaller than n. Yeah.
And if faster movement.
Yes, then you would have to have more sensors awake. Yeah.
Hey, but you could accompany, you just said it could move once, but you could have it move in one time step.
Several things, in which case you'd have to keep it awake a little
bit. But it wouldn't be hard to.
Yeah, exactly. But in fact, you can actually just look at some asymptotics. So that's a good question. Leads us to this. So if we have a bounded movement for the object on a line, for example, you can actually show that the number of the sensors you need to keep awake for unit time only grows logarithmically with n, as opposed to the duty cycle policy, which requires you to go linearly with n. So you get exponential savings. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you go to a two-dimensional networks, things there's more randomness in the movement of the object, and in fact, you can only get an n to the half kind of behavior. Okay. But it still could be significant. Can go from a million to 1,000. Yeah.
Is the sleep time, is it a random policy, or is it explicitly sleep this long and then wake up?
It's not random. Yeah, it's fixed amount of time.
Are you going to talk about cases where there's possibly misses? You
Yeah, so that can be incorporated. So if you have noisy measurements, for example, that's not that hard to incorporate. But yeah.
An intuition why you have that exponential gap between one and two dimensions?
Oh, yeah. We could talk about that later. So actually, where this log n is coming from is it's a summation of 1 over I. Summation of 1 over I type of term. And the n to the half comes from summation of 1 over square root of I squared plus j squared, two dimensions. And that, okay. Okay, so let's actually talk about this problem again. So let's look at the optimum solution of this problem. So what does the nonlinear filter look like for this simple problem? Actually, the nonlinear filter is very simple for this. So people like Mark Coates and John Fisher who work on nonlinear filtering would laugh at this. But basically, so basically, suppose you knew where the object was at this time step k, okay? Then the posterior distribution, the distribution of the position of the object is just a point mass sitting at that position. Okay, how do you update that? There's a Markov evolution. Okay, so if you didn't have any other observations, it would evolve in some manner. So the distribution at time k plus one. Again, I'm doing all this without equations, just pictures, right? So it would go to something like this. So these are the probabilities for these various positions. Okay. So, but you do have observations from sensors. Okay, so the object in this case went to this position here, from here to here, and here there is no sensor that's awake, so basically you don't know where the object is necessarily, but you do know that the object's not here and not here, because those sensors are awake and they don't see anything. Okay, so you update your distribution by zeroing out those things, and you get this new distribution by renormalizing. Okay, so this is how you do a distribution update, using the observations. Of course, if it was a more complicated sensing model, this distribution update would be much more difficult. Okay. All right, so once you do that, you can write down the dynamic programming equations, and the standard things, solve the optimization problem, write the Bellman equation. Of course, you can't solve this. You can't solve this for more than about 5 or 7 sensors, okay, because the state space grows exponentially with the number of sensors. Okay, so we really need to look for alternatives. The key approach to solving this problem is to somehow separate the problem into individual problems at the sensors. In that case, you could take something that's exponential and bring it down to linear. Okay, so one thing that we realized when we first looked at this is you could separate one problem for each sensor if you could do two things. Okay, if the cost somehow can be written as a cost, that's a sum of cost, each component of which is under the control of one sensor. And this is actually true for our problem, the way we set up our cost. Our energy cost is actually summed up across the sensors, our tracking cost is also across the sensors. So that's not a problem. But the other thing we need is that, I don't have a better way to put this, but one sensor's actions really don't affect the state evolution in the future. And how do we guarantee this? We can do this if we make some unrealistic assumptions. And we make these unrealistic assumptions only to generate a good policy, okay, that we can implement. And you can actually apply that to the real system where you don't have those assumptions. Okay, so the first unrealistic assumption, first way to make an unrealistic assumption, to assume that at the time the sensor is set to sleep, okay, goes to sleep, it needs to determine how long to sleep, it will assume that the sensor will not have any future observations. In other words, when it comes awake, okay, there's no more observations left. All that you have is the Markov evolution. Okay, so when you make that assumption, you actually end up with a closed form solution to this problem. Okay, it's not that hard to do. And that closed form solution is the obvious thing. You wake up at the first time, the expected tracking cost exceeds the expected energy cost, which seems like the natural thing to do. Okay, and we call this the FCR solution, for obvious reasons. The other way to have separation is is to assume that when the sensor comes awake, it has perfect knowledge of the state. Okay? And this actually is called the QMDP approach in the context of it's QMDP. The QMDP solution really applies on a sensor by sensor basis. And why it's called QMDP is the following. So when you're trying to solve a problem DP, one approach to solving the problem DP would be to somehow assume that there's a genie that tells you what the state is. You have what's called a genie-aided MDP solution. So you know this, you solve it assuming you know the state, then you get a standard Markov decision process. You solve that problem, and then you basically use the distribution of the state to average the cost to go, and use that average distribution to compute your policy at a given time. Okay, and I think Q refers to the averaging of the MDP solution. Of course, one advantage of doing it this way is that assuming there's more information than is actually available gives us a lower bound on the cost. So if you compute the cost for this under this assumption, you get a lower bound on optimal performance. So you can use that as a benchmark. Okay. So let's actually look at some results. So basically, here's how they perform. We have this lower bound, which comes from our QMDP cost, okay? And we see that we can come pretty close to this lower bound with our suboptimal solutions. Okay? This is for a line network with 41 sensors, and as I said, you have always track for about five sensors, having five sensors a week. And comparing it to a duty cycle policy, you can easily see that you get a huge gain. So using information about the state gives you a lot of gains in terms of energy. You do the same thing with the more complicated line networks with larger movement, and as Rob pointed out, you would need to keep more sensors awake per unit time when there's more animals. And the same thing, well, if you do it on a two-dimensional grid, you now have even more sensors that you need to keep awake. All right, so let's spend a couple more minutes talking about some practical issues now. More practical issues, I guess. So I didn't tell you and give you the equations for computing these policies. You can find these in papers I can give you references to. But The problem is you can compute these policies online as you go along, but you may need a lot of processing power, okay, to do that. And so you'd like to be able to compute these policies offline, but you need to do this for every sensor location and every possible distribution of the object location. And that could be a lot of memory storage, especially because of this, for every possible distribution of the object location. So somehow, if you could bring that down, bring that memory requirement down, and one way to do it is to replace the distribution by point masses. Okay, so if you replace the actual distribution by a point mass distribution, there are only n possible point mass values, so you need to only store n values per sensor. Okay, and so let's look at some point mass approximations. So basically, suppose in the line network, so suppose the distribution of the position of the objects is such that it can occupy these locations, these five locations. The support is there. Okay, so where should you put? How should you approximate this distribution, which has five values, by one point? One obvious way to do it is to just put it on the mean or the centroid in two dimensions. Another place to put it, for example, might be in a worst case location. For example, if this sensor comes away, okay, this is the worst possible position for the object in terms of sleep time. So that might be where you want to put it in that case. So those are the two options. Centroid and the nearest point. And what's the advantage of doing that? Once you have these point mass approximations, you can actually do a distributed implementation of the algorithm without that central controller. Because you can store this state, okay, which is this point mass, But you still have to worry about how you pass it on from one set of sensors that are awake at time one to the set of sensors that are awake at time two. So they you have to maintain some common sensors from one time set to the next. But it still allows for a distributed implementation because of simplicity. The other advantage is that it also allows you to deal with partial knowledge of statistics. So suppose you don't know everything about the Markov evolution. Well, all you know is that the conditional distribution of the position given the current position of the object has some support. In other words, if I'm here at this point in time, I know that I'm going to be in one of these five locations, but I don't know exactly what the probability distribution is. Okay? By using this nearest point method, okay, you really don't need the entire distribution. The support is enough. You can update the nearest point location just based on the support. Okay? So that's the other advantage of using these point method approximation. And actually, they do pretty well. Okay? So you lose a little bit in trade-off. But in the region where the tracking errors are small, you don't lose all that much. And one of the reasons is that when the tracking errors are small, you know where the object is pretty well, and point mass approximations that you can expect to be doing pretty well, because it's close to a point mass anyway. So that's what's happening there. So let me conclude. So one take-home message is that you can actually improve this trade-off between tracking errors and energy consumption, or other kinds of trade-off between energy consumption and other performance metrics by using information about the state of the system. So doing something smart can be useful. The optimum solution, of course, to these state-on problems are going to be intractable, most likely. But the point I'm trying to make is that maybe you can design good sub-optimal solutions that are probably good, so we have lower bounds that we can get to. Okay? And this methodology, of course, I'm hoping will be applicable to other designing smart sleeping for other sensing applications, like John was talking about, process monitoring, change detection, and so on. And also, I think more importantly, you can apply this methodology to other control problems, such as sensor selection that John Fisher was talking about. Okay. And of course, we've been, the simple model that I talked about, we already have a journal paper on that. But we are working on more complicated sensing models with cooperation among the nodes and so on and so forth. So hopefully, I mean, actually, some of you were at the SLMR conference last November where Jason presented some of our recent work on this problem. But we're making more realistic assumptions. And of course, the other very important problem, of course, is what happens when you have multiple objects. Okay. It's a non-trivial extension in that case. All right? So stop there.